maybe the race didn't go quite that well for you today.
Yeah, it's also strange that all television are here, not with winner.
Welcome back to the Velonese Podcast. I am Fred Dreyer, joined by Andrew Hood. Hoodie, we shut the press room down again. We're here at the Tour of Flanders in a small room overlooking a big thumping party. What's going on outside the window right now, Hoodie?
Yeah, we might have shut down the press room, but man, it's going to be a while before the bars of Oudenaarde are shut down. They got, I don't know if it's Nick Noyens, but somebody's out there throwing down some, you know, mega Euro trash disco music out there.
Yeah, we're in a room overlooking the main square in Oudenaarde. The Tour of Flanders finished several hours ago, and it is a rockin' Sunday night. People are partying well into the night, and the Tour of Flanders caps off an entire day of celebration for the Flemish people, and we see this bike race start in Antwerp, go all over the country, hit those bergs, finish here in Oudenaarde. And Hoodie, you've been to a lot of races here at the Tour of Flanders. What's going to stand out about this year's race for you?
To me, the big takeaway was really how even the field was across the peloton. We saw a pretty hard race. I mean, everyone was coming across the line on the limit, really, I thought. And we saw the big gap, the big split over the Muir, which was kind of a surprise. There was a big, big gap in that bunch. Came back together, and you saw a huge group come into the last lap. And surprise winner. And the big names were not there, and that was a surprise as well.
We saw Alberto Bettiol of Team EF Education First attack like crazy on the final ascent of the Aude Quermont, get a pretty good gap on a group containing lots of the pre-race favorites like Wout van Aert, Matthew van der Poel, Greg Van Avermaet, all the quick step riders. And you know, Bettiol, this gap, it hung in the measure for pretty much the final 20 kilometers. He went over the Paterberg with, I believe, a 20-second gap. I expected to see the gap come down as these guys really started to mount a chase, but it didn't. And as we all know, after the Paterberg, you have this descent onto some flat, twisty roads, and then usually a headwind section all the way to the finish line. I also expected to see Bettiol run out of gas at that point, but you know what? He just put his head down, he tucked down into that time trial position, and just chugged away. And he had enough time at the finish line to take his hands off the bars, raise his hands abroad, and really soak it in, because Hoodie, this is his first win ever.
I know, that's the incredible thing about it. Bettiol never had won a race in his entire professional career. But that kind of goes to show, I think, one committed rider against a chase often has the advantage, right? Because we talked to Van Avermaet at the finish line and Peter Sagan, and they both said in that chase group, no one wanted to take the responsibility of the chase. Van Avermaet said, you know, I felt strong. Why am I going to pull a guy like Christoph or some other guys who are just sitting on the wheel over the Quermont and the Paterberg? Why am I going to tow those guys to victory at the finish line to chase down Bettiol? And Sagan said the same thing. He goes, you know, if you get three or four guys who are committed on the chase, then you have a good chance about reeling in a guy like Bettiol. But when you got 10, 15 guys all taking turns, there's no real rhythm in that chase. We saw last year with Chris Froome and the Giro d'Italia. These things can happen, and a solo winner, and to the spoils go the brave, or maybe that's backwards. To the brave go the spoils.
Yeah, and you know, Bettiol, his victory was a very tactical one in that he was a very smart rider who made it through this first group of riders over the Muir, over some of the early bergs, and he had two teammates with him, Sebastian Langeveld and Sepp van Marke. And Sepp van Marke crashed during E3 Bink Bank. He was questionable for this race throughout the week. They decided to race him just a couple days ago, but the decision was he's going to be a domestique, so he's going to be a worker bee. And he really shone in that role because he joined an early attack, gained a pretty big advantage on the peloton, and when Bettiol and some of the favorites eventually did catch up, he put in these big, huge pulls to put Bettiol in good position so that he could actually attack on the Quermont. So it was one of those rare occasions where, you know, you hear in cycling all these people talk about, oh, teamwork and positioning and, you know, a group of many can overcome the stars, when it actually happened, because like Greg Van Avermaet didn't have any teammates up there. Quickstep was down to its last two guys. Wout Van Aert had one teammate, but he was pretty spent. And EF, you know, the melted popsicle,
underdogs,
melted popsicle jersey team actually had the numbers to do something.
Yeah, it was an impressive show by that team. And, you know, EF is not really a frontline favorite. for these big races, especially when Seb Van Mark was out. We spoke to him at the start this morning. He said if this wasn't Tour of Flanders, he would not even have raced today. But he said he didn't want to miss his favorite race. You know, Seb Van Mark's been close before winning this race. And now here comes Bettyol, who delivers the franchise victory. I think you were saying, Fred, this is now the fourth of five monuments that Jonathan Vaughter has managed to win. And tell us some more about the Bettyol story. You talked to Bettyol and some of his teammates. Kind of a funny backstory with this guy.
Yeah, so I spoke to Vaughters. I spoke with some other people around the EF Education Fair as well. I spoke to them with a lot of other reporters. It was not just me having one-on-one chats.
Not an exclusive with 10,000 fans.
There was fans, helicopters, a bunch of reporters crammed into a tight space around the bus. And, you know, the team officials, they were all high-fiving and drinking Quermonts and taking selfies and stuff like that. And so the first one we talked to was Andreas Clear, team director, sport director, and he talked about a lot of the tactics that helped set Bettyol up for the day and the fact that, you know, Bettyol has spent the first half of the season showing everyone how strong he was. He attacked over the Poggio at Milano San Remo. He made it into the final group of four at E3 Bink Bank. They knew he was on good form, but it was really this jockeying with Van Mark that put him in the right place. But with Vaughters, he told the story of how Bettyol came to be on his team, which, you know, Bettyol was one of these young Italian riders on the old Leaky Gas Cannondale team, which merged with Vaughters' team. I believe that was 2014-2015. And he said Bettyol had a lot of talent. He was a racer, but he had a hard time keeping the weight down. I think he said, if we could just keep the 15 extra pounds of gnocchi off of Bettyol, we all love gnocchi, that he was going to be a really good bike racer. And at some point, Bettyol told him that the culprit behind his pasta addiction was the fact that he lived with his mother, and his mom, like all Italian mothers, makes amazing homemade pasta. So he said, the way to counter this is you need to send me to more training camps. Get me away from mommy, because mom's food is just too dang good.
Let's go have dinner at Mama Bettyoli. I'm sure it's very tasty.
Oh, yeah. We got to go find Mama Bettyoli. If any of the listeners out there know where we can find Mama Bettyoli, apparently she lives in Tuscany. We should all go there and have a big team dinner. Hoodie, do you have that problem when you were growing up, Mama Hood?
Yeah.
Meals just a little too good?
I mean, I was still living in Mama Hood's basement well into my 30s, going into my cycling journalism career. But the big takeaway, I think, here, we also saw some incredible performances by young riders again.
Yeah.
It's like a generational change, you know. Van Avermaet, you know, early, mid-30s now, you know, he might never win a Flanders. Sagan's still young, but he wasn't looking as sharp as he normally does. You know, Vanderpool, Bettyol, Wout Van Aert, you know, some young guys coming up, and it's pretty exciting times for the classics right now.
It is. So I think there were two big dynamics that we saw today. One was this changing of the guard. So Matthew Vanderpool has this awful-looking crash, about 60K from the finish. Apparently he struck a planter when he was trying to bunny hop it. It damaged his wheel. He's coasting to stop, and then it looks like he just gets catapulted to the ground. Guess what? Gets a new bike, remounts it, starts a chase, catches the group, blows through the group, gets on the front, and at the Kreuzberg puts in this big attack that helps soften the group for what would happen.
Spits out Stibar.
Yeah, spits out Stibar for what would happen on the Quermont. Then, you know, the other dynamic, though, is Quickstep. So we have, you know, Matthew Vanderpool and Wout Van Aert coming into their own, Alberto Bettyol. And yet Quickstep, the team that so often dominates this race and the other cobblestone races, just didn't really have it today, Hoodie. I mean, you were around the Quickstep bus afterwards. What were people talking about?
But they still finished second.
Yeah.
They still got the podium. Kasper Asgreen, young kid, 24-year-old, his first Flanders. Man, boom, he's on the podium. So the big stars weren't there, but I think it really shows the depth of Quickstep. They had 11, 12 guys who were on the short list to race the big Flanders and Roubaix classics. This Asgreen kid was going so well during the lead-up races that Wilfred Peters decided to tap him to replace Seneschal, who was the rider last year on the winning team with Nicky Terpstra. They tipped this kid, and he had what an amazing race this guy had. He was following the breakaways. I mean, his job was to follow breakaways, cover breakaways, and then just pull to the final Quermont. He said he was just feeling great. He got on the wheel of Van Barl, coming across some of the late moves, and then found himself just following the wheels, trying to always just stay with that group. It's what you do if you're a rider, you're a support rider. You just stay with that group. You never know what's going to happen. Once they got down to those flats, It was kind of a funny story. He was talking about how he never raced Flanders, how his childhood hero was Philippe Joubert, and now here he is, he has to pinch himself every time he's in a team camp. He goes, look, man, here I am racing with freaking Joubert. I'm on his team now. Hits the flats, they're coming in. And at that point, Bettiol was gone. And so they said, of course, the option there for us was Yves Lampaert, Belgian national champion, to win the bunch, reduced bunch sprint, to take second. So he takes a big pull off the front, on his wheel, Bob Jungels. Jungels looked around, saw no one was behind him. He sat up, gapped, gave Asgreen that gap, and he just kept going. And no one could catch him, and he got second place. So he saves it for Quickstep, but you're right. Quickstep kind of fumbled today a little bit. Stibar got popped, as you were mentioning earlier, in that big move coming towards the last Quaremont. And Joubert was kind of sick. He got gapped out early. You know, is this the end of Quickstep? I don't think so, because they're so deep. They have so many young guys coming up, and you still have Alaphilippe, man. He won Milan San Remo.
Well, Hoodie, I think we have to talk about it. One of the big surprises of the day was Peter Sagan. He won this race 2 years ago. You know, he hasn't been looking as sharp and as strong as he normally is for these cobblestone classics. He, at his press conference, alluded to maybe that's because he's really trying to target Liège-Bastogne-Liège. But, you know, the thing about the Tour of Flanders is that it's so long, so hard, and so tactical that if you're not at your absolute peak performance, it's going to show. And for me, that really showed with Sagan, both on that final time up the Quermont and then the final time up the Paterberg. We saw some of these springy, explosive riders like Van Der Poel and Bettiol spring away from the group, whereas Sagan, he just was kind of chugging along mid-group. We've seen him have those afterburners before, seen him spring away from really strong riders on both of these climbs, and today it just seemed like he was sort of like stuck in second gear or something.
Well, that's right. I mean, he even admitted, we talked to him with the team bus afterward, he says, yeah, I'm not the same Peter Sagan on the One Flanders in 2016. You know, he got sick coming into, he was at a high altitude training camp in Sierra Nevada, got sick. You know, at this level, you miss that 1 or 2%, you're going to notice it. He got fourth at San Remo, almost got a podium there, but you're right, he's not been the same Peter Sagan. You know, maybe Peter Sagan, maybe he's kind of changing as a rider. When last year we saw him win Roubaix, which is a kind of race that is just pure power and brawn all the way across the cobbles. And now you're just seeing younger guys who kind of have that spark and that explosivity that Sagan had a few years ago. You know, so maybe we're seeing a different kind of Sagan emerge. You know, he was philosophical a bit at the bus. He was like, yeah, I'm not as good as I used to be, but I'm still close. I mean, even like a quote, bad Sagan is still better than most of the guys in the race. He could still, you know, he still has that base strength that he can just follow those wheels. He got gapped out on those last climbs a little bit, but he still has the strength and experience to dig his way back into that group. And, you know, of course, it's not the end of the Sagan era. But, you know, who knows? I mean, everyone was saying the same thing last year at the same exact point. Oh, Sagan hasn't done anything. And then, boom, he wins. He won Game of them last year. And then he wins Roubaix. So it's not done. And he has intentions of pedaling into the Ardennes this year and just kind of test the waters there a little bit. But their peak was still San Remo through Roubaix. He'll be strong next week for sure.
Well, you were in perfect positioning. As perfect positioning is often important for the Tour of Flanders, Hoodie, you were in perfect positioning at the Bora Hansgrohe bus when Sagan came out, gave some comments, and we picked that up on the audio. So let's hear from Peter Sagan right now.
How did your race go today? Was it the same Peter Sagan we've seen in the years past?
I don't think so. Also, the race style, it was a lot of difference from past years, and the race was open after 150 kilometers to go, and it was very hard race, and I think Bettiol just take all the chances, and he surprised everybody how strong he is, and also Van Der Poel and Greg was very strong today, but in the end nobody did a big difference, at least Bettiol, yeah. Oh well, how I said, it was pretty hard race, you know. Yesterday we spoke in press conference, you never know how the race going, and today it was just, you know, example that it was very hard, and I for sure I'm not like, I don't know, 3 years ago. But still, my campaign here in Belgium and the next classics are coming, then I'm very confident and I can get better. because I lose a lot when I was sick in Sierra Nevada, and then I think it's coming.
Peter, what happened in the flats?
Sorry, Slovak, before?
After the pattern,
guys, enough,
is there not a lot of cooperation with the group?
Well, it was it was not, because everybody we stay in the front, like the leaders from the team. And everybody just, wants to attack and go away, but it was a little bit hard because it was Edwin. And then everybody just stays good on the wheel, and it was a lot of riders. Then when somebody attacked, it was still a lot of riders to close the gaps, you know?
We had to change locations as we got chased out of our room by some aggressive press room police.
Some angry locals ready to probably hit a few beers, waiting for our, slow bums to get out of there.
Yeah, totally. Sorry to them. Yeah, and so we just left a scene in downtown Ordinarda where people were definitely enjoying the fact that there was a pro race going on, because we had the DJ, beer tents, people getting rowdy until late tonight. And that's the other thing about the Tour of Flanders is this is a pretty healthy party going on, Hoodie.
Yeah, if you like to ride your bike, come out here, spend a week, do the sportifs, hit the races. You know, what's great about this week too is that there's a race every 2 or 3 days. So you got time to ride your own bike, you got time to go to the races, time to check out some of the museums, great history, great food, great culture, great beer.
Yeah, a lot of great beer. And like you said, there's a lot of great riding. So one thing that I've been doing out here is I've been participating in the sportives. I came over with Ben Delaney of Roll Massif, and we did some of the rides. We did the Gent-Wevelgem sportive, we did the Flanders sportive, and Ben also rode a bunch of the cobblestone climbs, did some bike reviews. And Ben did a great interview with Dries Verklita, and Dries oversees cycling in Flanders, which is actually the government agency which is charged with like promoting cycling.
The dream job.
Flanders has a government agency that promotes cycling, and Ben caught up with Dries to talk about how they've created these routes with GPX files that people can download and go ride their favorite Flemish climbs, promoting the history and stuff like that. So I don't know, we don't have anything like that, Hoodie.
Yeah, really, just riding around here this last couple of days, it just shows you what a culture and a society and a government can do when they embrace cycling.
Yeah.
You know, we're going across that bridge by the new stadium over there, crossing a river, crossing the train tracks, crossing a highway, a nice 3-4 wide meter lane just built for bikes. I mean, how much does that cost them? And then the infrastructure, and then the people are just really make their way for cyclists. You're riding your bike, you come to an intersection, the cars are stopping, they're letting you go through. It's just a whole different vibe over here.
Yeah, last night in Antwerp, all of these people mobbing around on city bikes. There's the dockless city bike program, and the bikes are nice and everyone's using them, and I just love it coming over here and seeing how woven into the fabric the bike is. Well, let's throw to Ben and Dries as they talk about why Flanders has invested in promoting its cycling infrastructure overseas. And Hoodie, I think it's time for you and me to go grab a beer, maybe get some dinner. I think we're gonna leave the listeners with this interview, and we'll catch up with them midway through the week. So thank you, Hoodie, for making some time. Let's go get some food.
Let's do it.
I'm Ben Delaney with Roll Massif, here with Dries Verklita of Cycling in Flanders to talk about cycling in Flanders. Now, Dries, I love riding in Belgium for a number of reasons, and one of the primary ones is because it's just so easy. You can come in with really no sense of direction or where you are, and the infrastructure's in place, the signage is in place, and the culture's in place. Mm-hmm. It seems like recently Belgium has taken some steps to modernize it and make it even easier with the GPX files, so you can not just look at signposts, but also have it on your computer. So I'm curious about two things. One, tell me about the history of the signposting, the old school method.
Yeah.
And two, all the cool stuff you have going on cyclinginflanders.cc, where people can get GPX files.
Yeah.
So let's start with the old school.
Okay.
The routes are seemingly everywhere. What's the history of the signage there?
Well, we started signing bike routes mainly first for recreational cyclists. So at first you had, historically, every little town had its own bike route. It could be about some famous guy. It could be the tour of the monasteries or even beer routes, things like that. So that's how it started. Then we also added a long distance route. So we have about 1,000 kilometers of signposted long distance routes. So you can actually do the real tour of Flanders, which is like the whole all the borders of Flanders, and that's about 800 kilometers. So you can do that as kind of a bikepacking adventure trip. A bit later, we installed a new system, and that was kind of that really made that cycling took off here. It's called Cycling Node Network. So we selected about 16,000 kilometers of very bike-friendly routes, car-free or car, but not too much traffic on, and nice scenery and things like that. And every time two roads intersect, we put a number on. So, and then we added an online route planner. So you can easily make your own routes with that planner. And the only thing you have to do is remember like 10 numbers, and you have signposts everywhere around in the area with the numbers on. So it's very easy. Everybody can build his own route with it. You're sure you're always on nice routes and with enjoyable scenery. So that was very important. And for the cycling, of course, we have the Tour of Flanders routes signposted, and they start the Tour of Flanders center. So there's a yellow loop which focuses more on all the cobble sections. That's about 20 or 30 kilometers of cobbles in that route. Then we have the red loop which focuses on the old finale of the Ronde van Vlaanderen. So that goes out to the Muur of Gerardsbergen in the Bosberg. So the and then we have a blue loop, which is more the finale as it is now. So that's with Koppenberg in it. Then you go to the Quaremont and the Paterberg. So these were signposted. And last year we added, because a lot of riders, of course, they ride with their Garmin or Wahoo device. So we added the GPX files, and we built this new website, cyclinginflanders.cc, which is mainly focused on roads, not only the signposts, but we added extra roads on that as well. And if you connect your Strava account with it, you can even see which segments you already did in Flanders, which ones you haven't. And if you, like for instance, you didn't ride the Koppenberg yet, you just click it and it shows you, oh, this segment is in this route, and you can download the route, and it makes it really easy to tick off the boxes and complete your bucket list in Flanders.
Yeah, the ease of use is one thing that I love about the new website also. Like for instance, yesterday I was in Ghent, wanted to get down to the Muir, saw that the Wigo route started in Ghent, went to the Muir. So yeah, a couple clicks and I was on my way, just following my computer. Couldn't be easier.
Yeah, we have like traditionally just the route itself, but we also put the story in. So if you go to the route, you will have a video of the route. You have pictures of us riding it with description about the history and all the important spots along the route. So it's also a lot of content and the stories behind it that we also want to show.
So speaking of stories, we are here today at the Coors Cycling Museum in Roeselare. It's a great place to start rides. There's showers, there's bike lockers, there's more inspiration than you know what to do with. Yeah. Great food, great coffee and beer for afterwards. Mm-hmm. Where are other cities or towns you'd recommend as good starting points for rides?
Well, on our website, we have a section that's called Cycling Hubs, and these are all good starting points for your routes, because they have the infrastructure to assemble your bike or take a shower and things like that. So yeah, the most known will probably be the Tour of Flanders Center, because that's in the heart of the whole Flanders area with all the cobbled climbs. But we also have...
And that's in Oudenaarde.
That's in Oudenaarde, yes. And then if you go east of Brussels, you have the Svennes Cycling Center. So it's they have a permanent cyclocross track that you can ride the whole year long. But there's also Svennes, his training routes. They are signposted starting from there. And you can even combine it with like gravel races like Dwars door het Hageland, which is probably not very known in the States. But here it's a very cool race to do. And in Ghent, then you have the Velodrome, Eddy Merckx Velodrome. That's more for your indoor cycling, but it's also very cool to start your ride over there.
If you had one day to ride in Belgium, where would you suggest people go?
Probably, just the the most iconic climbs, and that's the Muir and the Koppenberg and the Quermon. So start somewhere in Oudenaarde. You can do a loop about 100 kilometers that takes it all in. If you want to do more, we have a route on our website, the Spartacus route. It's about 180 kilometers, and then you have really all the cobble sections, all the climbs that have been used historically in the Ronde van Vlaanderen.
That's good stuff. Thanks very much for your work and for making cycling that much cooler in Belgium.
You're very welcome. I hope to see many Americans on the roads here. Thanks.